I forgot to bring his name into the studio. I believe his name's Stephen. I don't want to give his last name. From Brighton. One of our listeners who sent along his copy of The Creature from Jekyll Island. The book that was written, 15 years ago originally by G. Edward Griffin, a fellow from Michigan. It's called, subtitled, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve. And I just begun to get into it. And it describes how the Federal Reserve was started. And you get to this one part very early in the book where he's talking about the goal here in creating the Federal Reserve was not to help the American taxpayer or protect the American consumer. It was to protect the richest banks from competition and to ensure that they would be successful and be able to tap the Treasury whenever they needed to protect themselves. And it's amazing to read the president of the lending bank and the finance officer of the defaulting corporation or government will join together and approach Congress if they've got problems. They will explain that the borrower has exhausted his ability to service the loan, and without assistance from the federal government, there will be dire consequences for the American people. Not only will there be unemployment and hardship at home, there will be massive disruptions in world markets. And I scratched my head and said, oh my goodness, this sounds like the TARP program. The banks are too big to fail. If we let them fail, the world economy will collapse. David Litman is on the other end of our line, chief economist with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. David, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
I've got to tell you, Griffin kind of nailed it back there, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he did. It was something that had been seen for over 200 years at that time by Adam Smith, the other classical economist that once the very powerful become in charge of lobbying, whether it's a union, a business, or whatnot. They capture the flag. They get the taxpayers' money. What the irony, however, is that in the long run, monopolists end up kowtowing to the political forces. They always lose. They think they're such good political entrepreneurs, but they always lose out to the professional politicians, always at the expense of the general public.
And that's pretty much what's happening now.
It's exactly what's happening now. The best example of what works, as opposed to what isn't working, was the Scottish free banking system, where a system of clearinghouses among the banks disciplined the financial institutions. Certainly, Frank, one of the most insidious things that's happening is this too-big-to-fail doctrine. That, along with political correct talk, has gotten this country into a very, very dangerous situation.
And we're giving money, more money, to these banks under the TARP program without oversight again. It's a very private handout of money. We don't know who's getting how much, what the terms for repayment are. This is unprecedented.
Well, I'll tell you what's even scarier to me, and it's closer to home for us. The billions of dollars of deficit that our state is running because the government can't stop spending, even in the midst of a collapsing private sector, they're counting on the general taxpayer of the United States, TARP funds, stimulus, so-called stimulus funds, to bail out their reckless spending.
And you're saying in a piece that you wrote for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, in fact, in a video that you put together for them, David, that unemployment in Michigan is going to get higher and higher and higher. You say we're going to see, with General Motors problems coming up, perhaps bankruptcy starting in a couple of weeks, we're going to see even less tax revenue going to Lansing. And you foresee unemployment in Michigan at somewhere between what figure by the end of the year?
17% and 20%. So far over the past 2 years, I've been on the low side, but in the right direction in forecasting Michigan's unemployment rate. There's no reason to think 17% to 20% will be on the high side. I think it'd probably be on the low side, not because of the General Motors bank. That was already in the cards, Frank. What's happening is the U.S. economy isn't growing at 2.5% or 3%. It won't be growing at that rate because of the tax increases, oil prices moving back up again, and businesses for 9 months, even after a recovery, will be skittish, afraid to hire because of the costs of the regulations and the legacy-type costs. They will not hire new employees until they can see a long-lasting, durable recovery that is not in the cards.
Yeah, on a national level, and I'm just starting to understand this. You've studied it and worked in this industry for years, David, so this is not new to you, but it is for a lot of us people in flyover country who are not educated in economics. What we learn is that we're headed very likely for a period of inflation in our country and in our state of Michigan that, in effect, equates to another tax because it represents the weakness of the dollar, more and more of which we just keep printing in Washington, which brings the value of our currency down. And it amounts to a bigger tax on all of us.
The end game tax is inflation. That is the government's way of trying to push under the carpet all of its profligate spending. And it can't borrow anymore because nobody, like the Chinese, want to lend to a risky nation. So every government for 40 centuries, whether it's a king, an emperor, has resorted to debasing the currency. And that's hoodwinking everyone. The only protection anyone has against inflation, the most devastating economic force of all times, is to keep working. No matter who you are, where you are, you got to keep current income as some sort of a guard. There is no other answer. It upends everything. And that is the ultimate deceit of a government, and we're going to get it from this administration and from its non-independent people like Bernanke, who already has shoved $1 trillion of new reserves into the system that amounts to $10 trillion after the considering the reserve requirements. $10 trillion of new money. I mean, that's so much money chasing too few goods. It takes about 3 to 5 years for that inflation, that hyperinflation, to fully blossom. But when Bernanke said back in 03, that if things looked kind of bleak, he'd get all the helicopters together and dump cash out of them. He thought he was joking. He wasn't joking. This is what also is coming to fruition, just like your analogy before with the Jekyll Island Federal Reserve.
Yeah. So you foresee, starting in 2012, that's when we're going to see this hyperinflation begin.
Well, it'll begin before then, but it'll reach the hyperinflation. You know, you'll be seeing Treasury bills and Treasury notes up in the double-digit range, just like I predicted the Michigan unemployment rates would be double-digit by year-end and over 12% by mid-year. I can see it moving into the 20s next year.
How else will we see the effects of hyperinflation here in Michigan, David?
Well, when hyperinflation affects everything. The whole price level is moving up very, very quickly. Tuition rates will be unaffordable. Most of your so-called entitlements will be broke, but they'll have made it look. It was like Jimmy Carter, the suits. You'll be very proud to own a $10,000 suit, which should cost about $100.
And they'll try to continue those entitlement programs because we'll be told those are the safety nets.
Yeah, the problem with people, they can't see it, but they're immediately, but their dollars buy so much less. They're worthless. You're reducing a value of 100 in 2000 to a matter of cents. If you looked at German hyperinflation, the Hungarian hyperinflation, all of those, they ruined the country. They had to start over again. It eventually went, of course, to a barter system. That's going back to the elements, the very elemental stage of human existence. It's hard to believe that a country this rich, smart, and would resort to that. But that's what politics do when they overwhelm good economic policies. And if you want to see that policy in effect, at its incipiency, look about you here in Michigan, and you'll see what Lansing has for us.
All right. What about General Motors if they have to file in 2 weeks, as everyone expects they will, for bankruptcy?
Oh, you know, General Motors has a lot going for it overseas. It could start up again as a major mover. They've reached parity in terms of productivity, in terms of car lineup. They need protection, as they did 4 months ago, 5 months ago now, when they had a fighting chance. They need this Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection under law, not a political solution like Chrysler was getting from Obama, and they need it fast. But to wait another month is another $6 billion or so that they can't recover from of the losses.
All right, David, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for the time this morning.
Sure, Frank.
I'll talk to you again soon. David Littman, the chief economist up at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. By the way, The interview with David Littman, the video interview at Mackinac Center, you can see it at mackinac.org, and you can read a lot of David Littman's pieces up there, too. Senior economist at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy.